Welcome to a Wednesday episode of the VanCast. Farhan Lalji and Thomas Drantz. Normally, we're in the same city, unless Drantz's on vacation, which we had for 3 weeks. This time, I'm in Ottawa. There is no hockey in Ottawa. There's just football. And I guess if we're doing an audio podcast, probably doesn't matter where I am. Where I am not is in Alberta, where Calgary is trailing 3-1 to the Edmonton Oilers. I'm like the most hated man in Edmonton.
But, I know, because you called Draisaitl a nobody.
No, I walked the Draisaitl part back, but I doubled down on the rest of it. And that still pissed everybody off. So what are you going to do, right? You can't make everybody happy. We do know that it is the most thin-skinned market in the country.
Edmonton?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there's an argument for it. The thing I love about Edmonton, the Edmonton market, is like the level of hardcore, passionate hockey knowledge is through the roof. Now, it's a little too technical. They don't get as like geeked up for the drama as we do in Vancouver. They get more geeked up for like tactics and player utilization. But the level of hockey talk, the appetite for hockey talk in Edmonton is through the roof and so much higher than it is in the most casual hockey market in the country, which is Calgary, right? Like, Flame support runs an inch wide, or sorry, a mile wide and an inch deep, right? Whereas Oilers fans, like Canucks fans, like Leafs fans, like Montreal Canadiens fans in two languages, are just completely obsessives. And so, respect to that. I love that. But yeah,
no question. But when I say thin-skinned, like the town kind of gets a bad rap, right? So everybody gets their backs up and everything gets personal. So because like for me, you know, my never-ending hate for Toronto. Like I'm neutral with the Raptors, but like Leafs and Jays, I just flat out despise, admittedly. So when the Leafs miss, like when the Leafs lost to Tampa, much like when the Blue Jays have lost previously, like I'll send out a tweet with fireworks, like pure celebration. And everyone, I don't have to put in a word, but everyone will know what I mean. And I might get two or three responses back from some scorned Toronto fan. But this, like there might be 300-400. It's unbelievable. It's funny and inspiring, quite honestly, because I've stopped paying attention to it. But just every once in a while, I'll peek in on one and there's like just venom daily. Every time somebody scores, oh, who's Nuge? Is he a nobody? And the Edmonton Twitter account, like the Oiler Twitter account, basically made their poll after the last game based on my suggestion. They didn't use the word nobody, but they said, who's our one tonight? Because I said they were a one-man team. So anyway, it's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, look, McDavid's been incredible. He is the biggest story. But for me, Markstrom's the biggest reason this is a 3-1 series so far. We'll see if he turns it around. You know, at the end of the day, Calgary has two home games, and this is the one you got to win, right? The Blues showed it. Like, the Blues won that game 5, and all of a sudden, well, now, let's be clear. You have to win game 5, 6, and 7. But this is the one where you can start to apply pressure. You win this one, you go back to Edmonton, maybe some collars get a little tight. You need to win tonight. Obviously, it's a must win, a true must win, but also, you know, this is how you build momentum. You got to win the 5th game. Calgary has a few advantages at their backs. They've controlled play better 5-on-5 in this series. You know, they're still the better team, and they've got two home games remaining. We'll see if they can get it done tonight. It feels like a really big game for the Oilers. Like, I feel like...
See, I look at it as that was as contained as McDavid has been in these playoffs.
Right.
And they still won. Right. Yeah. So if you're Edmonton, you're feeling pretty good about that, that you could actually make the case that we weren't a one-man team for one actual game. And, you know, they won despite the fact that McDavid had an assist. Right. So, and when I look at Markstrom in that last game, I don't know that it was bad goaltending from the standpoint of soft goals. Like the first play was just a mistake. Right. Like it wasn't a save that should have happened. It was just a guy that stubbed his toe in that moment, much like the final three-quarter length shot goal against Smith that tied the game, right? So when I looked at Markstrom in that one, I didn't see the softies, if you know what I mean, right? Like,
it
was a mistake.
Well, and there was that huge save on the...
As opposed to just goals, shots you should have saved.
And there was the huge save on Draisaitl.
Yeah,
like massive, sure. Massive save. So, yeah, I mean, I feel you. I feel you. But, you know, 850 for the series is not going to cut it.
No question.
They need him to become the story for a different reason. They certainly could use Mike Smith becoming the story for the expected reason. And if they, you know, if that flips and they just keep doing what they're doing, we're going to see a game seven. But whether or not that'll occur, we'll see.
Can happen, Grant. Sure, you've been known to say that.
No, stop it. Anything can happen
anything
in a game.
Anything can happen.
Anything can happen in a series. Anything can happen in a game. But non-elite teams don't win cups.
No question. But right. this is bordering on an elite team. That's what the fans in Edmonton would have you believe. They're complete. Everybody's contributing.
They know that's not true. You know, it's funny, too, because do you remember in midseason when things were really spiraling? I remember I had a tweet that was like, the Oilers are going to be fine. They're a playoff team. They're going to be fine. Now, I didn't say the Oilers are going to beat the Flames. I didn't think they would. But, I didn't buy the Oilers panic. And I tweeted that. And then for weeks heard from fans in Edmonton that the team sucked because they kept losing for another, 10 days before turning around and making me look good. So it goes. I really have been a cooler, though. I don't think I've predicted a single result in the last four games. Like, if I was betting on hockey the way I bet on basketball, I would be so icy the last four or five games, like since Saturday night. It's been like one of the weeks where everything that I've expected to happen has gone the other way. It's been quite an experience. So I'm glad for a lot of reasons that I in fact do not gamble on this sport. Hey, want to turn the conversation really quickly to Brock Besser and
his... It's a tough right turn.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, but it felt important to get to this.
Yeah, it is.
So Brock Besser's mother has posted on the family's public caring bridge page this morning, surfaced by David Quadrelli, and this is the note from Lori Besser. Our beloved Duke is skating his last lap around the hockey rink. He is at our home resting. Our family is close by his side. He's had some wonderful visits from family, friends, and neighbors. Please pray for his comfort and peace as he makes his way home to our Heavenly Father. And please pray for our children, as this is so very hard for them to let go. I just wanted to note this news. Besser, of course, shared, some of what he'd been working through in his season-ending press availability. We could tell immediately how heavy this was weighing on him, understandably so. More than anything else, though, our thoughts are with Duke at this moment and with the entire Besser family and with Brock himself. We're devastated to hear the news. Tremendously sad.
Extremely sad. And something that Brock has been dealing with really since he's been a Canuck, right? I mean, the health has been an issue for a long time. Duke has dealt with it from everything we've been led to believe with a tremendous amount of strength and grace. And from Brock's perspective, it's been up and down, right? As you'd expect for any son, any daughter, anybody that has to watch this and feel helpless. And whether it's affected him on or off the ice or on the ice, it certainly doesn't matter. It's not important. But just from the mom's post, you can tell, right, that all the children are feeling this right now. And our best goes out to him, because when you saw what happened at the end of the season at his availability, you can tell that this didn't just affect him. It affected all of his teammates, because he means so much to them and they've been witnessing it firsthand.
Yeah.
So it's a tough situation for everybody. I'm sure his teammates are going to be there for him. And I don't know what else you can say. It's been a long road for their entire family.
It's just awful news today. In Canucks world, and wanted to certainly make sure we acknowledge that before getting into some other topics. And look, Farhan, it's quiet around this team right now. You know, it is. Like, I mean, I had heard that things were pretty quiet on the extension front with Besser. I wonder now if, what's going on with his family is part of why. I mean, a contract doesn't matter right now, right? Like, it doesn't. And so,
no question. Yeah.
You know, while I'd heard that the sides were intending to talk soon, I hadn't heard much since. and sort of the sense I'd got was that things were very preliminary. And I do sort of wonder if this is a partial explanation for that. Not that that's either here nor there. I'm just trying to steer this conversation to more hockey related waters. But you know, the Horvat, Miller, Besser, the extendables is what I'm calling them. You know, I that's sort of the big thing looming over this team now, right? For me, the status of those three players. What can this group do to keep some of their best players together affordably? Because with the way that they've structured things, with the way that these contracts toll, and with where the team is at, which is, you know, to say out of the playoffs for the sixth time in 7 years and not good enough, frankly, as constructed, you know, you do need to be careful about allowing a core group that isn't, you know, part of a perennial playoff team to get too much more expensive and too much older together, right? And charting a future course for this franchise. So, you know, for me, the talks around those three are going to guide much of what we see from mid-July on. And I do expect that we'll hear an awful lot more about where things are going over the course of the next 5-6 weeks, even though things seem to be pretty quiet on all fronts for the moment.
Yeah. And when you look at Ben Kuzma yesterday wrote an article, or was it might've been this morning, on Besser and how the one-year contract by Patrick Laine that Columbus took might have an impact here as far as a potential Besser's contract is concerned. They're talking about a potential three-year deal. What's the right number? Because you want to buy some unrestricted free agency time. What is the right number in terms of where you think this is going to come in at? Let's assume that they don't do the qualifying offer, or that they make it, but that it doesn't turn into 1 year 7.5 is what he's going to play on this year. What ultimately becomes the right number for Besser?
Well, I mean, the Laine, the thing is like Laine is on a 1 year 7.5, right? So that's what Besser is entitled to as his queue up, right? So, you know, the way that that becomes the settlement is just that the offer is tendered, right? And then it's accepted. Like, that's it. You know, that's that. And that's a relatively straightforward route that this could go. But, you know, it's in the team's best interests in terms of, you know, minimizing that cap hit and, you know, potentially enhancing Besser's overall value as an asset for the club to come to a long-term settlement. And the way to do that is to go with a 2 or 3 year term. And I expect that two or 3 years is kind of the sweet spot. Player probably prefers two, team probably prefers three because of when the person hits unrestricted free agency. But, you know, that would seem to me to be the sweet spot. And the way you sort of do it is pretty straightforward in my view. Is you structure the deal so that in the first year salary-wise, like it's front-loaded, so in the first year salary-wise, you basically acknowledge the QO and pay 7.5 in salary, and you know, then you go down from there. So let's say it's 7.5, 6.5, 6.25 or whatever, and it comes in at 6.6 or 6.7, right? Like that's one way to structure a deal so that all sides leverage is represented and you get a UFA year out of it. And, you know, the player gets security, the team gets the same cost certainty anyway. So, you know, it feels like one of those ones that has a common sense solution, but we'll see how much progress can be made. You know, the 1 year times 7.5 remains a very likely outcome. But again, you know, at today anyway, for Brock, for his family, for this Canucks organization, this is sort of very much a backseat issue. The Miller Horvat thing, you know, remains to me sort of the more interesting one because the team's control expires, you know, basically in 13 months, right? July 1st, 2023, Horvat and Miller can be unrestricted free agents. And obviously this club can't afford to get to that point with both players walking sans return. You know, like there needs to be something that occurs, but there's no timeline or pressure points upcoming, right? They're not eligible to sign extensions until the 13th of July. You know, the team has some time. You could go into next season with both guys unsigned. You could go into August and still negotiate. You could get an extension done at training camp. You could get an extension done in December. You could get an extension done after the season. You know, up until the trade deadline, you have a chance to monetize the assets should you decide not to sign them. But I do think the history of trades for forwards of this caliber does suggest that, you know, you're probably best off moving in the offseason. And so I do think the club sort of faces a sign or deal decision, certainly with Miller. Maybe they feel that a little bit less so with a homegrown player like Horvat. But I mean, I think in both cases, you know, if you're not going to be able to either reach an extension for the 13th of July or have a good sense that you're trending in a favorable direction, I do think the team probably needs to strongly consider moving on. And, you know, I'd expect they will, but, you know, we'll see. There's still a lot in the air, still a lot about this club's offseason plans that we don't know or have a good sense of, especially because, you know, Patrick Alvin's played this close to the vest and this management group is new, right? They're new. They're talking in a way that lends me to believe that there's a cogent understanding of where the team is at and the distance still to travel to become among the NHL's elite. So it's a big distance, but, you know, having seen how the club performed for 57 years, considering how complicated this offseason is, you know, I don't think you'd be wrong necessarily to consider wanting to take one more year and see where you're at before maybe considering even more dramatic changes. Although, you know, at some point you wonder how much fans in this market are just willing to wait at this point for the emergence of a plan. Like, it's been so long since this club seemed to act decisively, and, you know, time feels nigh for some progress to be made one way or the other.
Let's take a quick break and come back and talk about some of the other variables that might influence some of those decisions, as well as the rest of round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So, Drancher, Elias Pettersson's 3-year deal, which is 1 year down, 2 years to go, how much does that impact what happens on the JT Miller front? In and of itself, it doesn't fit the window. The term is going to be too long. The asset value is going to be too great. And it does make a lot of sense to make the move. However, you've got Elias Pettersson, who theoretically is going into his platform year because you'd want to extend him before the final year. And don't you want JT Miller to be a part of that? Doesn't Pettersson want Miller to be a part of that? How much does losing Miller impact Pettersson's mindset going into the year and potential contract negotiations the following offseason?
It's a really interesting question for a variety of reasons. You know, I think the fact is that, you know, obviously team quality has a massive impact, without question, on how players value the stability of whatever situation they find themselves in. I mean, that's no secret here. But, you know, I do think with where the Canucks are at, and, you know, they can't let the feelings of players multiple, like, you know, in Pettersson's case, you're a full 13 months out from even considering an extension, right? And you can't let, well, how will he feel about it if we don't sign JT Miller and take a step back? Like, you can't be making decisions in that mode, in that defensive mode at this stage. Why not, though?
Because he's a cornerstone player. And you need to make sure that he's got faith in the organization and where it's going. And JT Miller is a quality player. And you're not going to look at Elias Pettersson and say, look, we're going to win 4 or 5 years down the road. You've got to tell Elias Pettersson that you're going to be competitive right now when you sign that deal.
You have to, for sure, which is why you have to be self-confident enough to, you know, make the right decision for the franchise and know that even though Pettersson's expiring in 25 months, you've got 25 months to build a team that he wants to be a part of. Like, he's restricted in 25 months anyway. It's not like he's a UFA. You know, it's not like it's not like you're over a barrel. You've got Hughes locked up long term. You've got Demko locked up long term. You've got 25 months with Pettersson, and then he's expiring. You can't be defensive about going about building a team patiently and in a way that results in you ultimately icing an elite team. You know, if you keep taking into account the things that don't matter, like Pettersson's feelings now about a decision that he won't make for 25 months, and that even then he'll be restricted on, you know, that's not what matters. You have to keep your eyes trained on, you know, bolstering the club's sort of arsenal of weapons asset-wise, right? Whether it's the prospect system, whether it's amassing draft picks, carving out cap flexibility, and getting cheaper and younger at the NHL level. Like, that's, and better too, but that's sort of the side product of the fundamental sort of aspects of building a good team that this club has ignored for too long, while building an NHL roster that's, you know, not good enough and too hard to dissemble. So, you know, it can't be in the foreground of this club's thinking this far out from restricted free agency. Like, it just can't. It cannot be that. That they need to be focused on winning and the desirability of the organization as a destination to play for. Like, that follows. That'll follow. Modernize your facilities. Install good process. Start carrying yourself like a world-class organization or sporting organization again, which the club has not done in far too long. And the rest will follow. That's my view of it. I can't even think about Pettersson's feelings about the matter now. Because he's 25 months out from being restricted, right? He's 37 months out from being unrestricted. Like, if Rutherford and company can't build a really good team, or at least a team that looks like it's on the precipice of being really, really good in 37 months, well, then Pettersson's decision to walk or stay isn't even their biggest issue.
Another player I want to ask you about is Quinn Hughes. Now, think about the discussion we had 3 years ago about Quinn Hughes or Cale Makar as who should have been the rookie of the year. And certainly you made the case, and the numbers backed it up based on his value to the team and the difference he made on the ice for the Canucks relative to what Cale Makar did for the Avs, that Quinn Hughes should have won rookie of the year. When you look at these two players now, I mean, and this is not to diminish Quinn, because Quinn Hughes has certainly improved his game. He had the sophomore slump, but this year he's been very good again, broke a number of Canuck records, and certainly the best defenseman in Canuck franchise history. But Cale Makar, especially in these playoffs, in my mind, he's the second most impressive skater behind Connor McDavid.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, look, he's been great, but there's a lot of this that goes around, especially like we're seeing a lot of it with McDavid right now, right? Where it's like, oh boy, I'd feel bad if I was a Hart voter that didn't vote for McDavid. And it's like, really? Because I don't think McDavid should win the Hart. Or, you know, like, I don't think McDavid was the Hart winner this year. Not to tip my vote, but, you know, I didn't think he was. I thought the defensive game was good, but improved. He's improved a lot defensively over the past couple of years, but I thought Austin Matthews played Selke quality defense. McDavid had 123 points, a career high for him. It's incredible. It's the, you know, fourth highest total in the cap era, points-wise. Amazing. Not taking it for granted, but Matthews scored 60 goals, and that's actually rarer than producing 123 points. Only three players have done it in the cap era. And by the way, Matthews missed 9 games, right? Like, Well, could he have scored five?
But the Leafs are a better team.
Yeah, I'm not disputing that. But they were a better team this year in part because of what Matthews accomplished. Like, Matthews
sure,
has more...
McDavid also carried the Oilers into the playoffs.
Yeah, but the Oilers, I mean, like, what when you look up and down those lineups, obviously Toronto's deeper, for sure. But it's not like McDavid plays with nobodies. You know, it's not like the Oilers... It's not like the Oilers are...
As a matter of fact, I said he does.
Well, nobody's relative to this level of competition. But it's not like yes. The Oilers... Like, the Oilers are not a playoff team without McDavid. I agree with that, right? But it's not like they're terrible, right? Like, up and down that roster, you've got Dreisaitl, you've got
But the Leafs are a playoff team without Matthews.
Probably. Probably. But they're not an elite... They're not an elite team without Matthews.
No, they're not, but they're a playoff team. McDavid makes a bigger difference in the Oilers lineup than Matthews does in the Leafs lineup.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
I mean, the Leafs are playing in a much tougher division, but this season, their back end is significantly better than Edmonton's, and they've got a deeper lineup.
This season for me, like, the thing is you also have to factor in that the Pacific was not as imposing as the Atlantic for me, particularly at the top end. You know, I don't think the Leafs are an elite team without McDavid or sorry, without Matthews, right? I don't think
the Leafs are a playoff team in a better division,
but bringing a playoff team up to the level of an elite team for me is a greater leap than bringing a playoff team into the playoffs. I know that the playoff bar is like the more sexy one to focus on, but it's like, it's really hard to be a top five team in the league. It's a really hard leap. Like, the leap is massive, and they don't get there without Matthews. They're just, you know, an also-ran playoff team if Matthews isn't there. That leap, to me, I weight that higher than I weight the bar from regular season to playoffs. That's just how I view the game. And then when you factor in Matthews' superior impact without the puck and the 60 goals, something we just don't see, particularly not from a player who missed 9 games, you know, I thought Matthews was the MVP. And, you know, I thought Shesterkin had an incredibly strong case, too, because the Rangers are definitely not a playoff team without Shesterkin. I mean, they're not even good without Shesterkin, in my opinion. And so, you know, honestly, I thought there were 3 guys with really good cases. I actually think you could have made a pretty good case for Johnny Gaudreau, too. And, you know, I just don't think McDavid was the Hart winner. That said, if you had to vote on the Conn Smythe winner through the first 11 games of the playoffs, I don't think you'd have to think very hard, right? Like, but that doesn't mean that post, like, ipso facto, McDavid should have been the Hart winner just because he's taken over the playoffs. It's not how it works.
Well,
it's a regular season award.
I am all about Edmonton, so I am all about Connor McDavid, just for the record.
Yeah, fair enough.
That said, Kill McCarr. Let's get back to that. You turn this back to McDavid.
Oh, sorry. Well, no, because, you know,
I'm not trying to revisit history on the court. Well, I'm not saying that. I'm just talking about how good Cale Makar is right now. And when you talk about...
He's incredible.
The best defenseman in the league.
Yeah, he's
that
up there.
Guy right now.
Yeah, he is. The way that he can counterattack, like, you focused on the skating, and I think that's dead on. The skating is... He's a ton of fun to watch. He's remarkable. And all of that said, I don't regret my take in the least. I thought people slept on Hughes for the Norris, and I'd still be fascinated to see what could Quinn Hughes do with, you know, a deeper, faster team, the better poised to take advantage of his skills. All that said, I don't think he could take over games necessarily or attack on the counter the way Makar does. Like, if you send a pass too far and Makar gets it, it feels like it's a split second and it's back in your zone and it's a scoring chance. You know, Quinn Hughes slows the game down where Makar speeds it up in a totally different way. And when you combine that skill set with what the Avalanche have, boy, it's lethal. Although, man, I'm worried about that team. That was a huge, huge missed opportunity for the Avalanche last night.
No question. And that was where I was going to take you next, right? I mean, do you give St. Louis a chance here? I don't. Like,
I do. I get what happened.
Two games to go. Colorado's too good.
You'd think so, but, like,
And I don't believe in momentum in the playoffs. I don't believe in emotion in the playoffs. Like, it floors me. I've always said this before, just the level of mental and emotional toughness that NHL teams constantly show me every playoff after the most gutting loss. And I don't believe the hangover from that game is going to affect Colorado going forward. Even McKinnon afterwards, it's supposed to be hard.
Yeah. I mean, I feel you, but, you know, I feel you and I agree. I mostly agree. Like, I obviously believe in Colorado. I think they're the best team on talent in the league. But you can't ignore the history now. Right? Like, the Colorado Avalanche led with under 4 minutes to go in game seven to get to the conference final in the bubble for 10 seconds. They took the lead, and 10 seconds later, Joel Kiviranta tied the game and then won it in overtime, completing his hat trick, right? The next year, they won the first two games against the Vegas Golden Knights in the second round at this stage of the playoffs, including a 7-1 demolishing of the Golden Knights in game two. At that point in the playoffs, the chatter was, can anyone stop the Avs, right? I think they lost game three in overtime, right? And then everything fell apart. They lost three straight, and the Vegas Golden Knights advanced, eliminating the Avs. This year, now, at the exact same stage, they take a 3-0 lead, cough it up, get what should have been an iconic series-clinching goal from McKinnon, cough that up, and then lose on an absolute muffin in overtime. You lose game six here. If Colorado loses game six here, this starts to feel like the Yips. And so that narrative is now in play for me. That narrative, I don't believe in this types of things. I don't think the Avalanche are cursed. I don't think they have a mental block here, but it's hard to ignore that history. And that's definitely something that they're also competing against. They're now not just playing the Blues. They're also playing their own legacy over the next two games. And yikes, I think I'd feel pretty nervous, to be totally honest with you, Farhan, if I were an Avs fan today.
Avalanche are going to win in six in St. Louis. Much like the Canucks were dealing with their own legacy in 2011 against Chicago, they clutched up, and it's not even going to go to overtime. The Avalanche are going to win comfortably in game six.
Yeah, look, they should. They should have won comfortably last night.
They should have. No question. Yeah. But I think that team is too talented. They're playoff built. Their goaltending is going to bounce back. All of it is there. St. Louis right now, especially with their goaltending situation, not going to happen. It's going to be in six, Colorado.
My brain agrees with you, right? My brain agrees with you. But, you know, my brain would have said, Calgary's the team that has a chance to fight back and the Blues are done. And so because it's playoff hockey, I'm sure the opposite's going to happen now.
Wait a minute. You're saying anything can happen. That's not true.
No, I'm saying right now, anyway,
crazy pathways to logical outcomes.
Correct. Right. So, you know, St. Louis can win a round. Edmonton can win a round. We could see an Edmonton St. Louis conference final. Probably won't, but we could.
Yeah.
The logic will come in, though, when you bump into the Lightning or the Hurricanes in the final. Right. Like when one of those teams faces them and is shooting on Vasilevsky and is like, all right. Only elite teams win the cup. Got it.
But imagine that, though. If Edmonton gets through this and winds up meeting St. Louis instead of Colorado, talk about the stars aligning.
I mean, for the Oilers, for sure. But for the NHL marketing department, I think you want the McMatchup.
Yeah, you do. On that note, I think we're going to wrap it up because we've made our picks. Actually, have you made your pick for for Calgary and Edmonton?
What do you mean? Yeah, I mean, I picked
Calgary in seven.
I had Calgary in seven all along, so I never counted the Oilers out here, but I didn't expect them to get it done.
Well, I'm going to take Edmonton to win this series. I think Edmonton's going to win it in six.
Well, gutsy, you're taking them when they're up 3-1.
I'm saying they're going to win the next game. Okay, look, they were outplayed in the last game.
Sorry, they're playing game five here.
The fact that they lost that game. Calgary lost that game while containing McDavid. That's going to buoy Edmonton a lot. And I don't think you're going to be able to contain McDavid twice.
Man, we do need a game six just so we have something to do on Saturday night, eh?
Yeah, this is game five. Yeah, that's right. So am I going to say they're winning in five? I can't say that, can I?
I don't know. It sounds like you're going to.
Oh, wow.
I'm obviously not betting on Calgary
winning in five.
There you go. So you're already wrong.
Yeah, I don't want to be wrong twice.
I think I had Avs in five, so I was deprived of one exact series call yesterday. And then I had Carolina in six, so that's still in play. I had Tampa in six, so they accelerated. They beat the Panthers quicker than I thought. But either way, I'm definitely going to have at least one wrong, and knowing my record in the playoffs so far, at least two wrong. So the bad picks keep coming. But remember, as you said, right? Illogical paths to logical conclusions. That's what I'm expecting. At the end, an elite team will win the cup. That's all I know.
Well, let's just hope that Calgary and Colorado play in the next round, but I don't think it's going to turn out that way.
Me neither.
It'll be Colorado and Edmonton.
Anything can happen.
Anything can happen. On that note, one thing we know is going to happen is we're going to wrap up this episode of the VanCast. We'd like to thank all of you for listening, for logging on, for tuning in. Right now, you can get memberships to The Athletic for just $1 a month for the next 6 months. And we will be back next week. Who are we going to get? Should we get the VIPs to request a guest?
Sure. If they would like to, yeah.
All right, let's do that.
We'll go find someone. We'll go get someone good.
Okay.
But let us know. Let us know who you want to hear from. We'll put the ask in.
Thanks for listening. For Drancer, I'm Farhan. We'll talk to you next week.